Years ago, I took a backpacking trip that involved 6 nights in the backcountry, which meant needing to pack sufficient food and supplies to last for a week. I erred on the side of carrying too much, something like everything but the kitchen sink, right? But I suppose that's better than the alternative, but it made for this difficult load that led to a host of physical symptoms while on the trail, and the body memories, even decades later, now come rushing back when I think about it. Let me just say, I'm happier for younger souls to go about their backpacking trips and sorting their supplies. I'll happily stick to day hikes now with the comforts of a hot shower and a bed of my own bed as well. But I share that image of an overloaded backpack. I hope you can conjure it. I share it as an analogy for the swirl of emotions that we are all carrying on our bodies and in our spirits these days, given the changing landscape of a traumatized existence in the face of all that has beset us these last few years. There is a weight we are bearing societally, and families do as well, and of course, we each have it as individuals. Anxiety or fear, restlessness, agitation, uncertainty, perhaps even for some, despair or a struggle to find a hopeful path forward. You decide what that emotional burden is that you're bearing. The point is, we are all bearing something these days, and it's a lot to hold, it's a lot to carry. And what is common, psychologists have told us, is that amidst this barrage of emotional burden is the impulse to find the pressure valve of anger as a way of coping. It's the psyche's natural way of seeking release. For some, it erupts in full-blown outbursts and even physical violence. We've seen that in the news, perhaps on our streets. But for most of us, it's more of a low simmering anger that has piggybacked its way into our lives, onto our souls. And I would suggest that none of us is immune from this. And I believe, friends, the important spiritual work of our time involves bringing that emotional awareness up to the surface so that we can deal with it. Learning the vocabulary of our emotions. That is what is necessary if we are to speak our truth into the crucible moment with any measure of poetic grace. Now, this is the church's collective work too, as we strive to speak a calm and fortifying word of hope into a broken, hurting world that seems on the cusp of a full boil of anger. So emotional vocabulary, this image, this burden, this emotional vocabulary is the lens through which I found myself reading this parable of the prodigal son this week once more as I prepared this sermon. Perhaps it's the best known parable of all, the best one known in all of Scripture, the one, therefore, whose familiarity risks hiding its most poignant truths right before our eyes because of that familiarity. I will tell you, all through the years, I have always angled in on this beautiful story for its narrative details, its defining triangle of characters, the father and two sons, and its brilliant plot schemes. These are beautiful points of entry, to be sure, and they give the story its lasting quality and influence. But I discovered this week, perhaps for the first time, just how much emotional burden is contained in these several verses halfway through Luke's gospel. We're told at the beginning that Jesus decides to tell his story in response to the grumbling launched in his direction about the company he keeps. So there's anger in the air in Jesus' time, just like ours. There's grumbling, we're told, a fair amount of whining about this and that. I'm reminded of that saying that whining is just anger expressed through a small hole. Isn't that a great image? Whining is just anger expressed through a small hole. But this story disarms us with its threads that easily weave into the fabric of our lives, because rare is the family that does not have a prodigal story of pain somewhere in the generations. In Jesus' version of this story of humanity, what emotional angst must have caused this younger son to go to his father and ask for his inheritance? Which, you see, if you get down to it, is the cultural equivalent of saying, "Dad, I wish you would die." How awful is that? And what pangs of grief must the father have felt in that moment? But instead of the father dying, something in the son dies a slow, ignominious death as he squanders his life away in distant lands that only care about his consumptive capacity. And when depleted, what emotions must that young son have processed along the way as things spiral down out of control in his life, leaving him destitute, finally deciding to return to his father's house as a last resort? We don't get all those emotional details, but we can surely imagine them, because we all know the very human impulses to rationalize and justify our flawed decisions. It's all their fault, before we really come to terms with the fact that it is we who are in desperate need of change. Earlier I said we're all packing a lot. We're all carrying a lot. Anxiety and fear, restlessness, agitation, uncertainty, anger, perhaps despair or even hopelessness. Only you can say what you're carrying. But you see, the prodigal son comes near us and peers into our eyes, yours and mine, knowingly, and asks the haunting question of that emotional burden: can we just please go home now? And then the elder son, we're told the elder son, who had kept faithful watch through it all, is so angry, he refuses to go into the house when his brother returns. The elder son has lost his way too, never having left his own backyard. His vision is blurred by anger. Yes, anger, a searing wrath crusting over a festering emotional wound of his own. What was it that had bothered him so? Perhaps it was grief in his own right for the loss of his brother. Grief, which we all know so often manifests as anger. Perhaps it was jealousy for the road that he didn't get to take, dutiful son that he was. Perhaps it was sorrow for the estranged feelings he had that came when his father showed such delight for the younger son, the prodigal son's return. And he's so busy, the elder son's so busy keeping track of his score sheet of naughty and nice that he's willing to miss the entire party, content instead to stroke his offended ego alone, isolated, grumbling, whining his anger through a small hole arising from his heart that is hardened. He is hurt and disoriented by the whole affair, But if we linger with him on the outer orbits of this story, in time our eyes will meet with his, and we will know in the exchange the experience of bitterness. Life's just not fair. Have you ever said or thought that? Life's just not fair. Surely we've all been there at some point. But notice then the pivot, that the Father does not wait for either son to come into him. He runs instead to greet his younger son on the road, the one who has been lost, the one presumed dead, the effusive welcome, the radical hospitality, the profligate forgiveness, all bundled together by this Father's undying love and mercy and an unwavering hope that this moment of return would come in the fullness of time it took his son to arrive at it. And rather than let the elder son fester in his self-imposed exile of wounded anger, the parent goes to him with an equally abundant supply of that same love and mercy and hope for him. Friends, the abiding gift of this parable is the effusive quality of God's love and mercy and hope for us all, for you and for me, wherever we find ourselves and for whatever reason, in the lands of foreign desolation or in the ambit of localized weariness, and certainly, without question, wherever the simmers of anger are touching our lives in these difficult days, God comes to us there. And the joyous delight in one of us is not mutually exclusive to any other. There is no depletion of the resource of God's delight in you and you and you and you and me. There is balm enough for all our wounds. There is a wideness in God's mercy. And the love of God is broader than the measures of the mind. For in the end, it is God who looks knowingly into our eyes and sees the beautiful being created for love and says, "Welcome home, my beloved. Welcome home."